The March 20th meeting of Education Policy Reform will come to order. Members, this is our official final meeting until the call of the chair. So I thought you'd get a kick out of the paradoxical language I just used. Our final meeting until the call of the chair. So please take from your folders today anything that you would like to have, maybe that you've saved for floor debate. We will not purge the folders yet, but that will occur in the next couple of weeks. I'd like to say thank you to all of you, and I will say another thank you when more members are here, but this has been a very good 2 years for me, and I hope for you as well, and I think our accomplishments are something of which we can be very proud. A special thank you, of course, to my committee administrator, Carmen Carter, who has to put up with me and with you and with those in the audience. And she has to, of course, juggle everything at one time. So she has many balls that she's throwing into the air to try to catch and stabilize. So thank you very much, Carmen. To, of course, Melissa, who was my committee legislative assistant and now is our great researcher, Melissa Hackenmuller, a very special person in our committee. And now to Kate, who's been helping us and will be the committee legislative assistant for the rest of the session. Of course, House Research, Lisa Larson. Lisa Larson is next to Carmen, my right hand, and my left as well. And we keep her busy many weekends, I'm sorry to tell you, but Lisa and I communicate sometimes Saturday night, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, and she's in her office and I'm in mine, and it's an ongoing back and forth, and I appreciate her work so very, very much. To our page, Andrew Matthews, for his work. Of course, to the department, to Kevin and Darren, who have been just the greatest gentlemen with whom to work. I really enjoy them and think that they do their work as government liaisons from the department in a very professional way. So thank you. And of course, to those in the audience who are paid to be here, our lobbyists. We thank you very much. You provide that balance that we need. So with that, members, just to remind you, until the call of the chair, we will not meet. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot Shannon. Shannon, you are an essential part of this operation as well because you keep your members informed, and I know that you always write challenging questions, and I appreciate that for the debate. So to the DFL, thank you very much for providing such great research in Shannon, and she has, I know, an excellent institutional memory that also keeps me on the path to accuracy, and knowing the fundamentals is very important. So with that, members, our first bill on the calendar today is House File 682. Representative Keel, welcome to the testifying table. I think we're going to move your bill recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. So would you like to officially move your bill, please?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I would like to move House File 682.
And members, we have a delete everything amendment. The A120794 amendment. And Representative Keel moves that. Representative Keel, would you explain your amendment, please? And I believe you have an oral amendment as well. You want to move that first?
Pardon. Madam Chair, I need to make one oral amendment. It would be on line 3.2. And where it says chemistry or physics credit or a technical education, I need to add career and technical education.
Representative Keel moves her oral amendment to insert after A on line 3.2, career and. And we'll incorporate that into your amendment. So we proceed to explain your amendment, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate this is the bill we passed last year, but we are looking to clarify that for the Department of Education. And I'm going to ask Mr. Schoenfeld if he will explain exactly what we're doing with this.
So let's move your amendment first.
Yes, please.
All those in favor of adoption as orally amended, the A120794 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. the amendment, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative, you're not there yet. Mr. Schoenfelder, welcome to our committee, and please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and we've been involved for a number of years in dealing with a lot of career and technical education issues. In this particular case, I'll give you a little refresher in the history of what you did a year ago. You might recall that a year ago we had Dr. Jim Stone here that did a presentation on career and tech and cross-matching of science standards and so forth to career and tech education. And at that point, the committee then approved this bill in its initial form, which was a form that basically just very simply stated that for the year 2014, where chemistry or physics is going to be required, that it be chemistry or physics or a career and technical education course. And it was our understanding at the time that it be a science-based career and technical education course, not just anything. In other words, sawing a board didn't count, but that it had to be based upon the standards and so forth that were science-based. And those type of classes would include things like agri-science and food science and health sciences that would be based in scientific areas. And so that moved then eventually to your summer special session. And during the special session, there was some language added during the conference time that had not been in either bill in the House or Senate, and it basically stated that it had to be underlying standards for chemistry or physics. What the result of that seemed to be was that basically you took a career in tech course and turned it into specifically a chemistry or physics course because it required all the underlying standards. And that was not really the intent of where we had come from, in the sense that we recognize that many of the career tech courses are multidisciplinary. And you may take a soil science class as an example, and it may include many standards from the chemistry area, dealing with anion cation exchange and things like that in the soils. Might also include the biological processes that take place in the soils, and it might even include some physical processes that take place. So we were looking for something a bit broader. And the other problem was that, and this goes back to the history, and I guess the best way I can explain it is I live in a house that today is about 3,000 square feet, but it started out as 724 square feet. And we added on about three different additions over the years. And that's kind of what has happened with this law. And if you look, for instance, you have two different sections of the law. One is course graduation requirements, in which we set out what specific courses are required to graduate. But in the other case, it is a standards and benchmarks area. And in that particular case, it deals with what standards and benchmarks have to be, but contained within there in past legislative sessions, there were course requirements installed in the standard and benchmark section, which probably never should have been, but they were. And so the requirement in 2014 for chemistry and physics does not presently exist in the course requirement. It exists in the standards and benchmark section, which is probably not the place it should be. So what this amendment does is try to clarify all of this. And what it states is that that it is, in fact, it will put it in both the standards and benchmarks where it originally was, and put it in the course requirements, so that now in the course requirements it will say the same thing that has been required, and that is that in 2014 you have a chemistry or physics class, but in addition to that, that it can be filled with a career and technical education course that is utilizes the standards and benchmarks for biology, chemistry, physics, or a combination thereof. And that's really what it is. It's really a clarification of what we believe the intent was of this committee when it went out of this committee last year.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify in favor of this change? Are there those with concerns? Okay, then we'll open it up for questions. Members, are there questions? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still grappling with this, I guess, and so I'm not even sure what question I want to ask. If I understand what you said, and maybe I didn't, it was we're adding chemistry and physics under course credits, where currently it was only under standards.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Okay. We're cross-referencing between the two, because in the standards, it does require chemistry or physics. That's the standards. If you were to take a look at, for instance, on page 2, lines 2.10, 2.10, okay, you'll see that the existing language requires...
it would be 2.8, line 2.8.
Yeah. Requires that there be a chemistry or physics credit that must be taken, but it's in the standards section, and it really probably should be in the course requirement section. So it's just cross-referencing between the two and clarifying that, it's not adding a new requirement as such, because the requirement is already in the standards section.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
And I'm sorry to be so dense with this. I guess I've had concerns all along by adding these as requirements for students, for all students to pass chemistry and physics. So I understand that we want to raise the standards in the bar, but I've been concerned that the bar gets raised so high, it's a challenge for kids who aren't going to a four-year college. They may want to go to career and tech school, or they may want to just graduate from high school and go into the workforce, and that we're potentially putting a roadblock for their graduation. So I have been supportive of the effort to move to allow them to achieve those credits through a tech and career course. I think that's a move in the right direction. From my perspective, I know not everyone agrees with that. But I'm unclear here now, if a student takes a career or tech class, what I had hoped was our intent is that the students would take that course and meet their science, chemistry or physics credit in that course, and now what I'm seeing is
that's what this does.
Okay, thank you, because I was looking to me like they didn't have to meet all the standards that were required in chemistry and physics, and if they don't meet all the standards, will they get the credit? And I want to make certain that we're allowing them to get the credit.
Mr. Schoenfeld, can you give an example? I mean, I'm thinking of one too, but would you give an example? Because the new language says utilizes standards associated with, and then we have chemistry, physics, and the new language is biology or a combination thereof. So can you cite an example so that we can get a clear understanding?
For instance, Madam Chair, I think I'm answering your question with this. For instance, when we teach soil science as an agri-science.
Yes.
One of the standards, and I don't have this ahead of me, so I can't tell you exactly, but I think one of the standards for chemistry is an example, is that you understand the periodic table.
Yes.
And, for instance, when we teach soil science, we can teach the periodic table in the context of soil
mm-hmm.
science. Okay. But in addition to that, we may not teach each and every single chemistry standard, but we probably will teach a great many of them. In addition to that, however, it's an interdisciplinary kind of a course. So we will also teach, for instance, in terms of the microbiology that takes place with, for instance, soybeans as an example, where they produce their own nitrogen through a microbiological process through the root system and a symbiotic relationship with bacteria. That's a biological section, and that would meet certain standards in the biology area. There's also physical traits of soils that might even, hydrology and so forth, that affect how the soils interact and how it releases nitrogen, as an example. That would be a physical interaction that might also be a physics kind of a lesson. So what I'm saying is there are several different areas here where actually the student in the end may get more standards applied in a class like that than he would in either a chemistry or a physics or a biology class. And so that's kind of what we had in mind here. In terms of meeting this, recognize this, that first of all, at the present time, chemistry or physics is not required. It takes place in 2014. And if you took a chemistry class, you would not receive physics standards. If you took a physics class, you would not receive chemistry standards. So what we're doing here is we're providing an alternative in career tech, and we may do it where we can do it collectively. Or you may do it where all of those standards could be taught in an individual course. I think, for instance, we could, in an agri-science class, we could teach all of the chemistry standards, but I'm not sure that's what you want to do specifically for each and every one. Because if you do that, you're basically turning a career in tech course into a chemistry or physics class.
Although, Mr. Schoenfeld, when Mr. Migrin, who teaches in Forest Lake, testified last year, I think he suggested to us, as we looked at how he had embedded the standards, that truly he was addressing them not only in combination but separately. So the students were getting the best of both worlds. They had a combination, and it was a real hands-on, and then they had the benchmarks, as I understood from his presentation. Representative Norton.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You're getting to the confusion that I'm experiencing here, because if we're going to require a student to graduate with chemistry or physics, then by the way this is, you're changing it, I fear that in 2014 the students will take this class and it will not be enough, because it will not have met either all the standards to have a chemistry credit or a physics credit. Even though, if it's a combination, the department needs to come up with what a combination credit, a little bit of physics and a little bit of chemistry, is going to look like, so that they still meet that standard.
Madam Chair?
Schoenfeld.
First of all, let me point out that within the law, it is not the department that makes that determination. It is the local school district,
yes,
that determines whether or not a course meets,
correct,
the science requirements for this. Secondly, the law here, yes, we are changing it. And you are stating, Representative Norton, Madam Chair, that there is a necessity to have a chemistry or physics class. That is what the existing law is, but this is a change to that law to say that there's a third alternative, which is what you suggested to me when you started the discussion. And so by making this statutory change that we're doing with this amendment, they won't necessarily have to meet all chemistry or all physics. It will be this third alternative, so that the student doesn't have to, would not at that point be concerned about the graduation and meeting all of the chemistry or all of the physics, because that's not the requirement of the law. The requirement of the law provides a third alternative, which is what you suggested to me when you first started talking, that they need a third alternative.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, and I'm sorry to monopolize here. I do believe that we were wrong in putting a requirement for chemistry or physics for all students as a graduation requirement before. I appreciate that you're trying to change in order to allow more students to be able to meet that requirement in a different manner. I think that's necessary. I'm a little confused about what we're doing, because we're going to hold some students to a chemistry standard, some to a physics standard, and some to something else that we haven't defined very well. So it's not that I don't agree with what you're trying to do. I guess I'm a little concerned with how we're doing it here in this bill. So I appreciate the effort. I think you're right. I just am not sure this is the answer, and I don't know. So I guess I'm confused about this, and I wish some other people would weigh in and to whether I'm really out of line here or if other
Madam
people
Chair,
have concerns.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, consider that the statement you just made, chemistry or physics, is an example. Let's take the current tech out of it. You're not meeting all the standards in chemistry or physics by a student graduating with what we have now. Because if he takes a chemistry class, he's not meeting the physics requirements. If he's taking the physics class, he's not meeting the chemistry requirements. And what we're doing here is provide a third alternative, as you seem to have suggested. And so the bottom line to this is that not all students learn in the same way. And not all students are going to require the same courses as they go towards, as you suggest, post-high school. In some cases, it will be college, in which case they probably will be taking the chemistry or the physics, and it will fulfill the requirement stated in this section. In other cases, they may take a career in tech course that is science-based and will fulfill the requirement of this section for graduation as well. And so they're doing it in an alternative way.
Madam Chair, I'll be done.
Yes, Representative Norton.
I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm trying to find the right solution. I'm not sure we're there. And frankly, Madam Chair, for the record, I graduated from high school near the top of my class without chemistry, without physics. I graduated from college without chemistry, without physics, and I think I've been a pretty upstanding and hopefully productive citizen. So I personally don't think people have to have chemistry and physics, depending on what career they want to go into. Or maybe not as upstanding as Mr. Dabney over there.
I'm not the one who wanted to roll call it.
Thank you for that. But my point is we need a large percent of our population to have science. Chemistry and physics would be very helpful to that science background in order to succeed in the world today. But not all of us need that in order to be productive, and we just need to find a way to make that work, and I'll end there.
You know, actually, Representative Norton, when Mr. Pye testifies for the next bill, he's an elementary math teacher, well, an elementary teacher, but specializes in individualizing with math. He probably could shed light on how, you know, it's in the hands of a teacher to meet the needs of students. And what I find when I observe career and technical courses is that teachers are very much in tune to how their students can learn chemistry, physics, biology, whichever of the science courses it is, in a real hands-on way, and therefore they understand much better. I did take chemistry and physics, and I don't think, you know, I'm more upstanding than you are, but I tell you, I struggled with physics. I was the only girl in my class, and, you know, physics was then, in the 1950s, basically a math course, probably still is, but I found it very difficult. If I could have had a career and technical course and had physics, although I apply a lot of physics because as a widow, I've always had to figure out how to do things on my own, so I use lots of levers, I'll tell you that, but, you know, those concepts. But I think it would have been more practical for me had I been able to learn it through career and technical. Representative Dabney, next question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my first quarter of college, I took chemistry. And my father was a pharmacist by training. And he looked at my report card and said, "So, I see you won't be following in my footsteps, will you?" I want to go back to the, I think, some of the same language on 2.9 and 2.10 that I think is of the concern of Representative my fine, upstanding colleague, Representative Norton. And I think for me, the challenge is, Mr. Schoenfeld, you're making a good argument that I can support for the language on 2.10 or a combination thereof. You're not making a good argument for the new language on 2.9 and 2.10 of utilizing, of striking, meeting the standards, and instead substituting for that, utilizing standards associated with. And I can get to a place with a little growth on my part that says, you know, giving a kid in an ag class or some other career and technical class a chance to meet a combination of standards that's concrete and real and motivating to them, I can get there. But watered down standards so that the kids taking the career and technical are getting less rigor is not a place I can get to.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Could you respond, please?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I don't think we're watering them down. I think we're given an opportunity to actually meet more standards than you would on either individual course. You may not meet, you know, I'm just hypothetically using a number. Let's suppose there are, because I don't know, I've looked at it, it's one page long. Let's suppose there are 20 chemistry standards. Let's suppose there are 20 biology standards and 20 physics standards. We might produce a course that's teaching 15 in each of those areas, which is meeting more science standards than if I took a chemistry course where I met 20. And that's what we're trying to get to here. We're not trying to, and again, it is up to the local school district to decide if that rigor exists. Presently, we have about 60% of our agri-science classes in the state that are being used for graduation under the existing law. because the local districts approve them. We have 40% that do not. And I'm not suggesting that just because it carries a title that it does that. This is going to be up to the same as it works with the chemistry or physics or biology or anything else or math or anything else with regard to the local school district has to make certain that it meets that rigor. And we don't not, and the reason we made these changes and actually put additions into this amendment versus what passed out of here last year was to say that it does need to utilize those standards that exist in the, you know, with the department and what's been created. And so we're trying to provide rigor here with an alternative way. The other thing that is a concern with the original language, with the underlying language, was that basically what you were doing was you were taking a class and you were saying, okay, this class, this food science class as an example, is going to meet all of the chemistry or all of the physics. In a sense, you're turning it into a chemistry or physics class in total. And so we're not diminishing the rigor. We're not diminishing the ability of the school district to determine that rigor. We're providing additional opportunity. And that would be my argument. You may not agree with it, but that's what we're trying to accomplish. And
Representative Dabney.
We think that this does do that. The other thing is, if you make it exactly like a chemistry or physics class, then is it still a career and tech class? And then what questions come in with other kinds of federal laws that I know that you haven't necessarily always agreed with in terms of the federals telling us what we must do? And so that's a portion of this too. And so, you know, I think we're all on the same page in terms of what is being tried to accomplish. And I can tell you I sat with the revisor yesterday afternoon for several hours trying to come up with the right kind of language to be able to do this. We feel that this does it. And for instance, I had a brief discussion this morning, I know, with, and I'm sure there's differences of opinion within, by many different people. But we've had discussion, for instance, with a career and tech person from the department that feels that this solves some of the problems that they had internally in interpreting the law. And that's what we're trying to do is to clarify it as to what the intent was. And so I think this goes beyond what passed out of here last year, in which you simply said a career and tech course could be an alternative to a physics or chemistry class.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Mr. Schoenfeld, the thing I'm not able to shake is that your argument is persuasive on the new language on 210 or a combination thereof. And to go back to your scenario early in your initial response to me, you said, you know, there's 20 chemistry standards and 20 physics standards, and maybe we take 15 of each and put it in this class. If that's the case, then we could reinsert the stricken language on 2.9, delete the new language of utilizing standards associated with, and we'd all be happy. Because you're saying we're going to use those standards, not something associated with those standards. That's the watered-down language that adds the murkiness. Strike that new vague language, reinsert the language that assures everyone that the standards will be the base of the combination. You get what you want, the ability for teachers to be creative and to put together a class the local school district says, yeah, meets the rigor and is based on the standards without the watered-down vagueness that lowers the threshold for kids taking career and technical ed.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, if you put in underlying standards, at least it seems that what the department took that to be last year was that you basically taught all underlying standards, all. And that's our concern, because basically what you're doing at that point is you're teaching a chemistry or a physics class.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Since the department has been raised several times, could they come down and comment on this language?
Because they've just been waiting, Representative Dabney. Yes. I've been watching
poised.
Them. Poised to return.
And will they respond with poise?
Madam Chair, I just
Representative
want,
Keel.
While you're thinking of listening to what he has to say, I want you to think about this. This is an agriculture class that, beginning agriculture class that we started in my school district shortly before I joined here. And just a thought when you're thinking about the mix, the introductory class is required to take any advanced science ag classes, and the students had a combination. They touched on biology, physics, a little bit of physics and chemistry, and that was just introductory. And what I felt it would do for freshmen and sophomores was to pique otherwise the requirement of mandating them to take biology, and a lot of those, you know, there's a portion of kids that go, I don't need this, but it actually showed them careers, not just agriculture careers, but medical careers, veterinarian careers, you know, anything that would have touched on those science classes, promoting our STEM programs to give those children an idea of what they want to do. And so you're going to hit a combination of those standards. You're not necessarily going to hit them all. Mm-hmm. But they're still required to take more science, in which they will very likely head to a science that's interesting for. And I can see them taking a class like this in ninth grade rather than, and then take biology in 10th grade that is required to give them a little more basics. So with that, I'll let the Department of
Welcome
Ed
to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. Just as a little background, after the last session, there definitely was some confusion at the department about what the legislature intended with the legislation that was passed last year. There was some, as has been testified, the question was whether or not the intention was to have these career and tech classes, if they meet some of the underlying standards, if that satisfies the requirement, or if you need to meet all of the physics or chemistry standards underlying. So, that being said, you know, the legislature was the one who put this in last year, and I would rely on you to clarify that for us during this time. But I think as far as this language goes, we do agree that there is some ambiguity with the meets standards associated with language. I think it would be clear if you say if you do keep the
meets
original language. Which, I'm sorry, yeah, the meets the underlying language, just because the associated with seems to infer some sort of peripheral standards, whereas underlying, where it seems like we're talking about chemistry standards, physics standards, you know, solidly. So, and I think that there's it seems like some of the other stakeholder groups are having similar concerns. But, you know, the question that Mr. Schoenfeld raised about whether or not by putting underlying in means whether or not you're meeting, requiring them to meet all the standards or some of the standards, I think that would still need to be clarified.
Mr. Corte, does the department specialist wish to comment on this, or is he letting you speak? Because I would like to hear from him. He's present, and you know, he's the one who has to deal with the calls that come in regard to, is this ambiguous or is it not? Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan Smith with the Minnesota Department of Education, supervisor in the section that deals with career and technical education. And I do agree that there has been some disagreement within the department on the interpretation of the statute as it was passed in 2011, that the language that was presented today does provide, I believe, some clarity to the department and suggests that it's the legislative intent to allow the career and technical education credit to satisfy a portion of or all of the required credit for chemistry or physics, assuming that that is your intent. I think that the reinstating the language on meeting the standards does not dilute the standards themselves or the intent of this legislation, this amendment, to allow students to meet chemistry, physics, or a combination thereof to meet one of the graduation requirements. So I believe that, assuming that it is your intent that career and technical education is to be substituted for the chemistry or physics requirement, then that this language, by reinstating meeting the standards, I believe would do so.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Smith. Maybe you should not leave because Representative Greiling. Oh, Representative Dabney, back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Smith, then, Mr. Schoenfeld's contention was that your current interpretation was for a CTE course to be satisfactory, it had to meet all of the chemistry and all of the physics standards. And it, if, excuse me, if this language were to go into statute with the reinstatement of the stricken language on 2.9 and the deletion of the new language on 2.9 and 2.10, but with the language on 2.10 of or combination thereof, would that resolve this apparent challenge and allow school districts to approve courses that draw from both sets of standards in a CTE course to accept those as partial or full, fully satisfying those standards for graduation requirements? I think I got that question out.
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney. Our difficulty in providing guidance to schools after the legislation was passed in 2011 was really premised on two things. One, whether or not the career and technical education course would need to meet all of the standards in chemistry or physics to be a substitute. And then two, whether or not that course, having met the standards, would be allowed to meet one of the three required science credits that was in statute 120B.024. And I believe that we had received an interpretation after the session last year from legislative staff that suggested the intent of the legislation was allow students to meet some of the standards in career and technical education and grant credit as long as the students met the remaining standards through some other vehicle provided by the school. And so we were satisfied with that interpretation, but still were unclear as to whether or not that option could meet one of the three required science standards. I believe that the language, as it is stated, clarifies the intent that it could meet one of the required standards. I think we would still have some discussion since my understanding of the legislation is it doesn't now require students to meet all chemistry and all physics standards. Whether or not meeting some standards in both would satisfy the legislative intent.
Representative Dabney?
Would thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to make this my last question, but I'm hoping we're doing productive work here. Mr. Smith, the or combination thereof on 210, does that not clarify legislative intent that teachers have the flexibility in these CTE courses to take from the different standards and create a class that the local school district then, with possible MDE guidance, would be able to approve for partial or complete, depending on the course, satisfaction of the graduation requirements?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, from my perspective, from the career and technical education community, I believe that it would. I cannot speak for the staff at the agency who deal with the academic standards or with the science.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This discussion is interesting to me, and my interpretation of why I supported this bill last year and why I think this committee supported this bill is because we thought we got a little overreaching with chemistry and physics mandates at the expense of a career and technical education. So I think we're struggling with having said two things, once for physics and chemistry, and then later we said a different thing, perhaps for career and technical. So I think we're still struggling with wanting to do both, but you can't do both if you're honest about it. So my question, the department seems to be struggling with what did we mean, and we've said more than one thing. I'm wondering if the department has a position.
Mr. Carte.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I'm sorry, I was speaking with Ms. Kelleher at the time that you asked your question. If you could please repeat it.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carte, I was asking what the department's position is. Obviously, the legislature is conflicted. You know, we mandated the higher level sciences, and then last year we wanted to mitigate that and back off a bit because it's been at the expense of career and technical, and now you're struggling to figure out what we meant, which is hard to do, and we don't know. I'm wondering if you if the department has a position.
Mr. Carty.
Madam Chair, members, you know, our interpretation of this law, after speaking with Mr. Smith and Ms. Oney, who does the work with standards at the department, as Mr. Smith mentioned, we did still take the interpretation that the students would be required to meet all the standards. Whether or not they could pick up some of those standards in the career and tech course and then pick up the rest of the standards elsewhere, that was up to the student, up to the school, how they wanted to organize that. But we did still think that they needed to meet all of the underlying standards. Again, this is new legislation, so if the students aren't going to be required to meet those standards, you know, if that's something that the legislature decides to do, then obviously, you know, we'd be happy moving forward with that. But our current interpretation, the way that we've currently been working, is that it should, that the students should be meeting all the standards.
Mr. Corte, I observed a class yesterday, and it was interesting. I observed the lesson, etc. But then the teacher shared with me these were language arts standards. And you know what he had highlighted? The benchmarks. That's what he was teaching to, the benchmarks. Because, of course, the standards list was never ending. So I think for us to assume that teachers teach to all standards is absurd. Because I think they teach to the benchmarks. I think that's what I would be doing if I were in the classroom, because that capsulizes. You can't take every single little standard and teach to it. You teach to the big picture, which is the benchmark, and that, of course, in language arts reading is that which is going to be tested, but that's what is considered most important for the student. So I think we have what here is a conflict with the language. You know, is it utilizing standards associated with, or is it meets the standards underlying? And I don't know. I think it's a toss-up. So, Mr. Schoenfeld, are you going to return to the table? Thank you, Mr. Carty. Have we resolved this with the School Boards Association?
Madam Chair, this whole discussion is exactly what we've been trying to deal with for, I think, 6 years. And every time we make a change, the department interprets it to be a little different, or that it's fuzzy or whatever. This was our best shot. Now, to Representative Dabney's concern about the meeting the underlying standards, in my discussions with Mr. Smith and others, they feel that meets does not mean, and I guess you'd have to put it on the record, that it doesn't not mean meeting every single standard, as you just stated. And that's the issue. Okay? But meets the underlying is probably acceptable language if it is understood that that is not meeting every individual standard, and that it does not mean that it turns a career and technical education course into a physics or a chemistry course. And as Representative Dreiling had indicated, there is a kind of a dual track here that people are fighting with, in a sense that, on the one hand, people are saying, well, we didn't intend, we went a little too far. We shouldn't have done just chemistry or physics. But then you're still trying to meet the chemistry or physics. Those are conflictive kinds of things that are taking place. So I guess if you believe that you should, that you went too far, then I would suggest you support the bill. But to meet the underlying standards, and we talked to staff, and there was also a concern about whether or not the, because we're including biology with it, as to whether that overtook the biology credit required. Now, in the language, we had put other than, for instance, in the agri-science section, we said other than the specified science credit in biology. So we did not intend to do that. That was not the intent. But I think that the your staff has got some additional language that can help to clarify that piece too. So what I would suggest is we can go back on line 9 to meets underlying standards. I would appreciate if it was stated for the record that that doesn't meet every underlying standard.
Mr. Schoenfeld, it's on record. It's okay. On the tape. The department listens or is supposed to listen to these to know our intent. Okay. I think we've stated it numerous times today.
And that if there's more comfort with meets the underlying standards, I'm told that that can be understood by the department to be a combination of these standards. And then I think your staff has got a another clarification for the fact that it was not, even though biology is included, so that it's understood that we can have a combination course, that it not replace the original biology that is required in the law.
Ms. Larson.
Maybe with that we can get out of here.
Yes. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members, on the document A12-0794 on page 2, line 9, delete utilizes and insert meets. On page 2, line 10, delete associated with and insert underlying. Delete thereof and insert of those standards approved by the district. And I think that last change, or a combination of those standards approved by the district, may go a long way to addressing Mr. Schoenfeld's concern, and that is that if there is a combination of chemistry, physics, and biology standards that represent the career and technical program, it would be approved by the district. So it's not simply a requirement that all chemistry or all physics or all biology underlie that career and technical program. So then on page 3, line 2, per the amendment previously, after the word A, insert career and, delete utilizes and inserts meets, delete associated. On page 3, line 3, delete with and insert underlying, and delete thereof and insert of those standards approved by the district. But meeting the biology standards under this item does not meet the biology requirements under item 1.
Ms. Larson, maybe we should begin a new sentence with your but. And I don't want to start a sentence with but. Underlying the chemistry, physics, or biology credit, or a combination of those standards approved by the district is very good.
Madam Chair, but we're in the middle of a clause.
Yes. Do we want this then? I know you're trying to. I just okay. Well, we repeat the clause, the but part, the but clause.
Yes. Yes. But meeting the biology, meeting biology standards under this item does not meet the biology requirement under item 1.
Madam Chair.
Representative Keel.
Ms. Larson, by this change, we are saying that we can use biology standards in career tech, but it does not meet the legislature's requirement for biology standards as a instructional class. Correct?
No.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Keel, there is currently a requirement that students complete one credit in biology. And what this would say is that that requirement for completing one credit in biology remains regardless of whatever biology credits might underlie the career and technical course.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, I just want to make clear. The question that was asked and the answer that were given dealt with two different things. The question that was asked, does it meet the biology standards? It does meet the biology standards. And hopefully someday we will be in a situation in which ag teachers and food science teachers and biology teachers all work concurrently in a school district to provide, to meet the standards that students must learn by the time they graduate. Okay? So we don't want to eliminate their ability to meet the standards, but it does not meet the course requirement, as was stated by your staff. And so I just wanted to make that clear, that there are two different things. And that's part of the problem here that this whole creation started with, And I don't know, Mr. Smith, is there anything else you care? Okay. That is part of the problem here. People confusing the difference between a course requirement and a meeting
the standards
and benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And so we do meet the standards and benchmarks with this language, but we do not meet the course requirement for biology.
So, Mr. Smith, having listened to this suggested amendment, especially the latter, what concerns would the department have when you receive calls? Is this what we need so that biology is separated?
Madam Chair, Dan Smith from the department. Hopefully I wrote the amendment down correctly as it was moving forward. And I believe that, you know, again, from the department's perspective, we have interpreted all along that students are required to take 3 credits in science, one of which must be biology. And now that the second credit beginning in 2014 was to have been either chemistry or physics, but now could be chemistry or physics or a career in technical education course that meets underlying standards of chemistry, physics, biology, or a combination, and that would be allowed to meet one of the 3 required credits in science. I think the only remaining questions that would come to the department would be around licensure issues pertaining to the intent of the legislation and other areas, but I don't think that's anything that would have a place in this particular statute.
You know, members, I'd like to lay this bill over and have all of you get together, perhaps in some corner, so we can go on to the next bill and together with staff work out some language that will be clearly understood by school districts, teachers, career and technical folks, so that we don't have this ambiguity going on endlessly. So with that, the chair will lay over House File 682 as amended, and hopefully you'll be back here by 10 to 10. Thank you. Next on the agenda is Representative Depke's House File 2658. Welcome, Representative Depke, and I'll move 2658, recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Depke, I'll also move the H2658DE1 amendment. Would you explain your amendment, please?
Yes, I will. Thank you very much.
Which is really the bill, members, because it's the delete everything.
Yes. Thank you very much. I want to introduce, first of all, the DE1 amendment, and the bill 2658 is really all about individualizing and encouraging individualized learning. The DE1 amendment, creating individualized learning schools, is proposing to amend existing law governing school site decision-making agreements in Minnesota Statute Section 123B.04. The new language appears in Subdivision 4 in the bill, and it's a newly created Subdivision A, and the purpose of this amendment is directing school districts to try to replicate successful achievement contracts. It replaces the original bill's Article 1, Individualized Learning Schools, with a short but substantial rewrite of an existing statute, and it eliminates the PSEO requirement and other provisions in Article 2. I would like that amendment to be passed before, so that we can get on to the substantive nature of the bill.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Depke, I know you have some special people here to address the individualized learning sites.
Yes, I do. I have several people, and I'd like to bring Mr. Ted Coldry from Education Evolving to the table as
Welcome,
well.
Welcome, Mr. Coldry.
Before we...
Mr. Pye, why don't you come down as well?
Yes, and I have several, two testifiers, actually. One, Mr. Pye from White Bear Lake, and then we do have a student from Avalon as well. Just to reiterate, the policy purpose of this particular legislation is increasing achievement through individualized learning. With this legislator, we would be enabling and encouraging school districts to test and evaluate individualized teaching and learning. This is a very simple bill, entirely voluntary. It's enabling. The decision is entirely at the district level, and it is not a spending program. Schools will be able to work within their existing resources. The two testifiers that we have today will be able to reinforce the early efforts of this program. And I will now turn it over to Mr. Coldry to elaborate.
Welcome, Mr. Coldry. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ted Coldry. I'm an associate with the Center for Policy Studies and its project known as Education Evolving. Are we okay on the mic here?
Yes, very good. Please proceed.
This is an important step toward improving achievement. Minnesota could be getting a lot more than it is from both its students and its teachers. But individualizing learning is probably the key to that. The old traditional arrangement of age grading, as Larry Cuban, a longtime professor at Stanford, liked to say, works powerfully against the opportunity for many students to achieve. So it's a good idea to open the way for schools to test and demonstrate individualized learning. Individualization will improve achievement in two ways. First, it improves motivation. Jack Freymeyer, at the end of a long career in curriculum and instruction, concluded that if students want to learn, they will, and if they don't, you probably can't make them. So that any successful effort to improve achievement has to begin by improving motivation. And motivation, as he said, is individual. Students differ in their aptitudes and in their interests. So the key to improving achievement is to permit the teacher to work with those variations. Second, individualization improves achievement by letting the teacher adapt the learning program to the variation in the level of attainment that he or she finds in the students in the class. Mr. Pye will talk specifically about that with respect to the 8-year-old three third graders that he has in his school in White Bear Lake. But I would say that talking with Dave Heistad, who's for years been the person in charge of evaluation and research for Minneapolis, he fully confirms the remarkable variation that Mr. Pye will tell you about in his classroom. These differences, both in motivation and in levels of attainment, just cry out for individualizing the student work, for changing pace so that those who need more time get more time and those who can go further, go further. The Graba's daughter went through 3 years of math in her fourth grade year. And before the year was out, they were having to pay the district tuition to bring a seventh grade math teacher into the K-6 school. But at the same time, I hear this the same conclusion from a principal who works with adjudicated youth in the inner city. About the importance of individualization. Individualization and motivation, she said to me, go hand in glove. We had a teacher of the year here in Minnesota in the early, about 10 years ago, who went around saying only individualized education can leave no child behind. So in earlier years, there was really no way to implement this. I remember Albert Shanker at the first anniversary of St. Paul's Saturn School talking about how the American teacher is confronted by the mixed ability classroom. But he said we can't afford a teacher for every student. He actually said that the old rural ungraded school was a better school than the one we have today for this purpose. He could envision, remember this is 92 or something like that, he could envision technology being the answer, but it wasn't here yet. Today, the technology is rapidly developing that'll make this possible. And again, Mr. Pye can talk about that. There are intelligent tutoring systems now that can adapt both to the student's different level of attainment and to the different learning styles of different students and produce enormous gains in student learning. So as Representative Deppe said, the bill is a kind of a pilot. It respects standards. What it changes is pedagogy. It's entirely voluntary, enabling legislation. It's a local decision. It enables and encourages, which are the words that seem to make sense here. It's the legislature will sometimes mandate, and the legislature will sometimes prohibit, and the legislature will sometimes permit. It's okay also for the legislature to encourage. A lot of people will not feel inclined to do what they can't sense is wanted. So a signal that individualization and a test and demonstration of it is wanted will be very important. This is also the practical way for the legislature to proceed on a strategy of improving achievement. We can't blow up the system and start all over, although I heard a commissioner once express a frustrated desire to do that. And we can't get where we need to go in the at the rate we need simply by making itty-bitty changes on all the schools simultaneously. So what basically makes sense, and what the legislature's strategy has been, I think, in Minnesota, is to create a kind of an R&D sector in which a limited number of schools get to do radically different things. This is essentially what your charter sector does. It has been operating to a significant degree, although not universally, as a R&D sector for your public education. Its schools are essentially start out as site-based. They do very much resemble the schools in Finland, to be honest about it. You have a picture in your packet that will show you what an individualized, personalized high school looks like. It is quite radically different than the conventional classroom. And you'll hear a student in a moment who talked about having come through one of the schools that began 10 or 15 years ago to work on an individualized basis. But this bill deals with existing law that applies just to the district sector. So, in a nutshell, your risks with this are low. The potential reward is high, and the costs are low. The student is also the worker on the job of learning. And anything else the teachers can get from the students in the way of performance comes to you for free.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Caldrea. Mr. Pye?
Yes.
Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, my name is Anant Pai. I'm a fifth-year teacher in White Bear Lake. This is my third career. I heard some discussion about physics and science before. I, too, started as a pharmacist way back because my dad said I was no good for banking. I don't know what he would say about my changing careers to become a teacher, because he started out as a teacher first and opted to leave classroom because he needed to make a little more money to support a growing family. I came into teaching actually as first a volunteer in a school in North St. Paul, where my daughter attended elementary years. And I used to work after school with these eight children that were doing advanced math. And it was amazing to me how their minds worked. Each one would solve the problem completely differently. And sooner or later, I found out that these kids did things that were much more interesting than software, which I was doing for business. So this journey, 5 years later, has been one of change as well. I started out as a conventional classroom teacher, starting in front of the class and trying to get everybody to pay attention and finding that children find a lot of other things than the teacher who is talking to them to be more interesting, especially when you're doing a whole class. And soon I found that it wasn't productive for me to try to do all the differentiation using paper. I tried to do that as well. I wasn't going anywhere fast. So today, although I introduced myself as a third grade teacher, I actually teach anywhere from first grade to sometimes eighth grade, depending on the child. So I believe that all children can learn, provided the environment allows them the flexibility to stretch the elasticity of their brain. Some of them work faster, others need a little more time, but there is not a child I have come across. Now, first year I might not have said this, but fifth year I'll say to you, every child can learn. Now, this is to give you an honest picture. I have to start with what my class was like before I started doing the things in the classroom that changed the student experience. I was teaching a multi-age class, second and third grade, in 08-09, and I extracted out only the children that were third graders in my class that year. So you're not looking at the whole class. The reason I did that was in the subsequent years for which you're going to see the data, I have now been teaching only third grade, so no second graders in my class now. Another thing that I want to say too is I think with data we forget there are children behind these things, and I want to stress to you that numbers aren't the only way that I judge their learning, because there are days, it doesn't matter what the test is, eight and 9 year old children could care less. They will sit there and push buttons and be done with it, because there are more fun things to come back into the classroom to do, really. Might I also add, these children in the very first year, as a part of teaching a rights and responsibilities lesson, one of the children told me that they had a right to technology in the classroom, which we had in our class. And I thought about it overnight, and the next day I decided I was pulling every single thing, yanked it off, set it by the door, and called the custodian to come and remove it. And by afternoon, I had a revolt on my hands. I had a protest song written against me, and students were marching to the bus singing protest against Mr. Pai. So they have actually written a petition. You can see that on my classroom site. It has been running for 2 years. And there have been people who have signed from around the world, and most especially each of the students that has been present in my class and their family members, to whom I must add my school district's representative, Carol McFarland, whose grandchildren have been in my class the first year and second and third year. So that the second child was able to see the transition or transformation that we went through in class. I want to stress one thing. NWEA MAP, widely respected for their work, states that students who achieve typical growth will remain at approximately the same percentile score over time, which means that if a student in school starts at about you know, 10 or 15 percentile, their likelihood by the time they graduate, 12th graders, of, say, breaking past 50, most unlikely. This based on the current education practices in classrooms. Now, with that as a background, I'm going to show you my first year. All of these scores come from NWBEA MAP test. Our district administers it three times a year, fall, winter, and spring. They are sorted by where they started in the fall. So you'll see that the very first student up here that has 2 percentile, given what NWBEA says, that child should have likely finished not better than maybe 10 percentile at best. You can see that this young child was able to score 46 percentile in winter, and by spring, 42. So there was serious growth. The child immediately next to him was not in school very much, which makes it very difficult for me to transform learning. But what you see is the high scorers really have very little impact on the class because I'm working with percentile scores. The average classroom growth was in double digits, which is tabulated at the bottom. And as compared to non-individualized classrooms, the needle did move substantially. The changes in the traditional classrooms were 1 percentile compared to 11 percentile in my class. And substantial part of that contribution came from the students who performed quite low to begin with. And these are the very children we all, as adults, worry about, parents and you as representatives. And I think individualization can really have the positive impact. I'm not going to go through each one of these. This is 10-11. You have the reports and the file or the papers you have with you. This is not true just for math. Same for reading. This is before I individualized. My own class did not move very much. 52 percentile. Winter was 52 percentile. Not much change in spring either, although it's not in this this picture. Reading growth parallels what happened in math for all of the students, especially the ones that started out low. Again, a double-digit growth, 11 percentile compared to 2 percentile and 5 percentile in traditional classrooms. The record is the same for MCA, the state-administered test. 86% proficiency versus 58%, and 95% versus 78%. Also in reading, not as substantial a difference. However, please note that I don't get additional outside support for math, whereas I do get Title I support for my students that are challenged in reading. The reason I believe that this works is in a traditional classroom operation, you have a fixed time to learn a topic and results in variable levels of learning. As opposed to in an individualized class, you have variable time to learn and fixed amount of learning. And to give you what that looks like, at the beginning of the year, I had about one-third of my students this year alone. And I'm going to use math as an example because we can concretely relate to that. I had about one-third of my students who could not add 6 plus 6 to 9 plus 9, et cetera, which are basic must-have skills from second grade that help with multi-digit addition. And 3.5 months later, by January, when we took the math test, I had 85% of this class able to do three digits by two digits multiplication. And that included a number of the students who started out not being able to do 6+6. And to equate that to what it looks like in standards, multi-digit multiplication is part of fourth grade standards. I support individualization, and I do that because I've seen it work, and I believe a trajectory that starts in second and third grade can last a lifetime. And here I am. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pye. Please stay close, because there will be questions. Ms. Marsh.
And I do want to say, before we get into Ms. Marsh's testimony, too, that both of these folks are on spring break this week, so we are not depriving them of any educational opportunities for students during this testimony.
Thank you, Representative. Ms. Marsh, please say your name for the record and begin.
Yeah, I think you'd be more comfortable.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for that introduction. My name is Holly Marsh. I am on spring break, but I'm here today to support this bill and to paint a picture for you what individualized education can do for students. I am a senior at Avalon, a project-based teacher-run charter school in St. Paul. If you'll be so kind as to open up your packets, there are a couple of pictures of Avalon and Minnesota New Country School, two schools that follow this model. As you can see, it is a very non-traditional structure. I invite each and every one of you to come and visit us at Avalon. We would love to have you. Students at schools like this are treated like adults, and that is made possible through each of us having our own individualized work area, much like the cubicle I have at my job during the summer. Attending an individualized school has taught me two things. The first is that when education is made relevant to students' lives, passion for learning can be established and fostered, and great success achieved and sustained in multiple dimensions and quantifiable definitions. This has certainly been true for myself. For the past 6 years at Avalon, I have been encouraged to search for my interests and follow them while meeting the Minnesota graduation standards. Each student is held accountable for meeting these graduation standards as the legislature has dictated them. In junior year, I completed a pre-calculus and statistics course and passed, along with the majority of my peers, the MCA math test, something that I stressed over terribly, but I'm proud that I passed finally. An example of the individualized approach I've taken is last year and this year, I am teaching myself physics and chemistry through a textbook curriculum. While the majority of my peers chose to take traditional courses for this, I prefer to work at my own pace, and with the different structure that I've taken, it allowed me to do so. So I'll be completing physics this year with that structure. This non-traditional structure of courses and primarily independent work time has allowed me to follow different courses as far as internships goes. Most notably, at age 14, I began volunteering for the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, a unit of the National Park Service based in the Twin Cities. We're based downtown St. Paul. One day before my 16th birthday, I was sworn in as an interpretive park ranger for the National Park Service. I now work every Saturday and federal holiday, and I work full-time during the summer, developing programs for the public, as well as co-managing the Junior Ranger program and working with our Volunteers in Parks database. Stemming directly from that, in 2010, I was flown to Washington, D.C. to accept the George Hartsog Junior Award for Youth Volunteer of the Year. The conception of my career was made possible because of the independent, individualized, innovative course that my education was able to take because of the structure of this. And I'm very grateful to my school for allowing me to do that. It is also very inspiring to watch my peers take an interest in their education and achieve great things as well. At Avalon, we're required to do a 300-hour-plus senior project. Mine is on education reform, so some of you may have seen me around here for the past couple of months. A 2011 graduate and friend of mine studied permaculture design for his project. He interviewed a couple dozen community experts, and his final product was a two-scale, very sophisticated land use plan for his house that he implemented. Another friend of mine transformed the Lord of the Rings trilogy into a graphic novel while looking at the various literary, historical elements of that to earn those standards. It's a beautiful piece of work, really incredible. I truly appreciate that this bill encourages schools, teachers, and students to take an innovative approach to widening the definition of achievement. at schools like Avalon and the ones that we propose here, where students are able to create portfolios of work that include finalized projects, project rubrics, finalization reports, these more truly demonstrate student knowledge than simply test data does. I've really appreciated the opportunity to develop a portfolio of work that includes resume that's now pretty abundant because of the different opportunities I've been able to take because of my education. 6 years ago, when I started at Avalon after being homeschooled for 4 years, beyond the normal issues of wanting to fit in with my peers and be a good student, I had two primary concerns. The first was, would a school that specializes in individualized education properly prepare me for life outside of school, following a career and going to college? And the second was, would I emerge on the other side of these 6 years of schooling with my diploma and my passion for learning intact? That was a very, very important element and something that I feared I would lose because of the system. In June, I will graduate with a 4.0 GPA, all of my requirements met, and with a passion for civic engagement and knowledge acquisition that is absolutely stronger than ever. Next year, I will begin taking courses at St. Paul College while I continue my career with the National Park Service. I encourage each of you to take a look at this bill and to give your support for it. I am strongly in support of it, as I have stated, and I welcome any questions from the committee members.
Thank you very much, Ms. Marsh. Representative Defke, do you have other testifiers?
No, these are my
So are there those in the audience, because this is a public hearing, who would like to testify in favor of or with concerns? Seeing none and hearing none. Representative Myra, do you have a question for this group, or is that for the previous bill? Representative Peterson-Sandy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I remember lobbying for this original bill way back when for site-based schools, and we certainly, the idea of an individualized program is great. And do they have any students at your school who don't succeed as well as you?
Ms. Marsh.
Thank you for the question. Success is certainly an individualized thing, and I think if we're talking about starting your career, certainly it's not something that is typical of a student. I'm not typical. But I think what I see primarily with my peers is that they are really eager to learn and that they are eager to go on either to a career or to post-secondary education. And for me, that's a true sign of preparation and involvement in your education and success.
And then, Madam Chair, having worked with regular ed as well as special ed, this does sound like almost like IEPs for every student, which I don't think is a bad idea, and I like the idea of individualized programs. It doesn't say in here who is the agreement between the teacher and the student, teacher, student, parent, or teacher, parent, student, school board?
Representative Depke.
Who does the IEP, basically, that individualized plan? Who's involved?
Well, it's primarily with the teacher, obviously.
Right.
But the whole idea of the bill is that the site team and the education leaders are under the school board auspices. There needs to be also a principal involved to make sure that that's all going on. And so it's permissive, but however, there is structure under the site team management, and there are very particular rules in the site team legislation that require the board, you know, the site team to be involved in it. Mr. Coldery, do you have any additional comments on that or no?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Coldery.
Representative Depke, members, it had seemed to me that the agreement concept, Representative Peterson, operates at two levels. As going into this, this is basically a law that talks about an agreement between the board and or the district and the school to have certain authority, in this case, have the authority to individualize instruction. So there is an agreement at that level. Then down one level, which I thought your question also went to, is the question of how the ILP, maybe Individualized Learning Plan, since we're not operating under the federal statute here, is something that Holly could quickly speak to about how the project is designed and approved.
Ms. Marsh.
Madam Chair, Representative, at Avalon, because we're a project-based school, each student lays out over the course of their time there how they're going to meet the graduation standards. And so when you go to propose a project, whether or not it has graduation standards implemented into it, you meet with your advisor, you get feedback from your parents, and you meet with two advisory team members to propose the project, and then they follow you along into your finalization date. So you're correct. It is much like having an individualized plan. Although I've reached the same benchmarks as my peers and have gotten the same graduation standards, no two educations are identical.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Depke, thank you for bringing this forward. I think this is fabulous. I can't go without saying how honored I was to have my grandchildren, to have Mr. Pye. I get choked up about it. I spent 3 years now going to his classroom, and he engages the kids. He engages the families. And you walk into his classroom, and the discipline is fantastic. I've been in the other three classrooms, and it's not all the same. I find it disturbing that when he has had his achievement growth in the school, that the principal asks him not to share that because it will embarrass the other three classroom teachers. That's a shame. He's doing fabulous things, and he's spent a lot of his time and his own money and also gone out to get grants to do these things. Children are allowed to make mistakes, and nobody's threatening them. Nobody's, it's a fabulous place. The differentiation, being in the classroom, you see the difference of all the kids in the classroom and how he's able to keep all the kids engaged. They're rotating in groups, and they help each other. And it's fabulous. I I've been there for the past 3 years with a lot of different people. Some in this room, even Carmen Carter was there, Representative Mariani. I could go on and on, many people from the department. But this year, I was about the second week of school, I was there with Commissioner Caselius. And all of a sudden it hit her, this is the second week of school and these kids are all engaged. They were already learning. They weren't catching up on what they had lost during the summer. They were moving forward. That's really powerful. So with that, I could go on and on about Mr. Pye and the work he's done. And I've been in 3 years ago during spring break. There were parents, grandparents, and even a great-grandparent there that came in because they were so concerned about what's going to happen next year when they don't have this kind of engagement in their classroom. They were so afraid of what's going to happen when they go back to the regular classroom. It shows you the power of what's going on when you individualize things for kids. And then one kudo to Mr. Pye also that he doesn't get much recognition for is that there's an iCivics program across the United States that was started by Sandra Day O'Connor. And there are 17 teachers that are on that advisory council, and Mr. Pye is the only one from Minnesota, and he is also the only one representing elementary schools. And so I think he needs to be recognized for that, and I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, looking at the bill, I certainly support the bill and individualization, but my question is, the whole first section on page 3 is all permissive and they may and they're encouraged and so forth. Then we get down to the second to the last line of the new language, 3.29, and it's all of a sudden must, but it says must seek to establish. And, I have, what does that mean, must seek to establish? Because just like students need individualized learning, I'm a believer also that so do school sites. And, some may want to do this and have students that want to do it, and others may not. And so when you say must seek, does that mean then they work on it, promote it, but if it's not, you lead the horse to water and they don't want to drink, then you back off?
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, for asking that question. I was going to volunteer the answer because I knew you were going to ask. Ms. Larson and I crafted this language very carefully, and I will have her support. But I do not view this in any way as egregiously mandatory. What we're saying is that if you've got within the school district, and it's under the auspices of the board and the administration, if you've got three sites that are doing very well and 3 years in a row they've proven to have significant improvement in their schools, then it is strongly encouraging the school district to seek to establish additional sites. But it's not mandatory. And Ms. Larson, if you would like to clarify anything on that?
No.
She said I did it perfectly, so.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Depke, it doesn't say strongly encourage. It says must.
Yes. They must seek. But it does not require them to do it.
Well, I would say, Representative Depke, is like saying must try, you know, to get others to recognize that the data from these 3 consecutive years of improved student achievement should demonstrate that others must try to do this as well because it's been successful. That's the way I interpret that. Representative Kath.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess, you know, mine kind of comes on the line of Representative Greiling, but my question is that we have, you know, an educator as well as a student right here that are already showing the successes of this. I guess, you know, the impetus behind the bill, and what are the roadblocks right now from this actually happening in districts? I know it's happening in my own. We have project-based learning in Owatonna right now. I guess I'm a little confused as to, you know, I think it's very feel-good up at the top and things like that, but are there some stumbling blocks that we should be repealing or things that we should be removing rather than moving it this way? And I guess that's a question for you, Representative Depke, is what is the need for this if it's already currently happening, and is there actually something more that we should be doing to remove some of the other roadblocks?
Representative Depke.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. It is permissive, and it is in current law. It is a way of bringing to the surface a more complete a complete statute that we already have, you know, an area in statute that will really emphasize how important this is and that it's okay to do this within school districts. So it brings all the elements together into one place and says, this you can do.
Yes. Mr. Pye.
Mr. Pye.
In one of my evaluations as a probationary teacher, I had the statement, it's not verbatim, but the idea behind it was that I should practice the board-approved curriculum. Now, I could be technically challenged for not doing board-approved curriculum because that's not what I do. In my classroom, if I tried to do that using the materials that the district has provided, it's widely insufficient to reach that child who needs to do first grade level work. And it's widely insufficient to reach that child who needs to be doing seventh and eighth grade work. It seems to me common sense should allow for all schools to do this. But I've been here for 5 years, so I've stopped asking that question. But I do believe that having some sort of a legislative clearance, if you will, I don't know if that's the only thing that comes through this, even that would be, I think, greatly appreciated, because I've actually funded all of this myself. I really would like to be able to say, hey, look, there is out there a provision that says what I'm doing needs to be supported. Not just stuff sent to me in boxes. So how you articulate that, I don't know, but I really need that help.
Mr. Caldry.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, no question, as we've discussed this, has been asked more often than can't they do this now. To some degree they can, and to some degree they are, but not enough. Mr. Pye is not replicable as an individual. To have a person come into teaching mid-career from a successful life in the business community and spend his own money to do this in a singular classroom is not a replicable model. And it's not a viable model in a school Representative McFarland talked about the parents' concerns. What are the teachers going to do the next year when the next grade up has this, again, is a more varied levels of attainment? It needs to be on a whole school basis, which is why we're moving through a statute that talks about converting a whole school. And we think this would have, we think this is what teachers inherently know and want to do. It really speaks to the teachers' needs, because individualization, that is, enhances the teacher's role, because in the school, only the teachers know the students as individuals.
Members, I need to know if you want to further, if you would like further discussion of this, so that we need to meet Thursday, or are we ready to vote? Representative Greiling, because Representative Mariani's not here, could you respond to that? Because we can meet Thursday. I thought today would be our final day, but we can meet Thursday. I would like to bring the first bill up for a vote, but what would your caucus
like
Chair to do?
And members, you know, if people have violent objections in my caucus, please raise your hand, but I'm ready to vote. I agree the bill doesn't, we could discuss what's not in it and so forth, but what is in it I don't think is at all controversial.
So with that said, I'm going to renew Representative Depke's motion that House File 2658, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Yes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the general register. Representative Keel.
Madam Chair, after speaking with all the interested parties, and we all agreed that Ms. Larson's wording was just fine and got to where we wanted to go with the ability for students to take not only a career and tech course along with the possibility of chemistry or physics or the combination of those approved by the district. So I believe we are all in agreement.
So Representative Keel, I will move your the amendment that Ms. Larson has presented to us. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Keel, any closing comment?
No, I would thank you all for you know, really, really discussing this, because I think we understand where we want it to go and have given a clear message to the Department of Education about exactly this. So, thank
Representative
you.
O'Driscoll, comment?
And after the vote, I'd like to just share a comment with the committee, if I could.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So with the amendment adopted, I will renew Representative Keel's motion that 682, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill moves to the general register. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'd like to express my deep gratitude for your support of House File 2244 yesterday on the House floor. It was truly a bipartisan piece of legislation that put the kids in the state of Minnesota first, and this is the Education Reform Committee. And I think that is exactly what we passed yesterday, with some very good education reform as relates to the trust lands. Many of you were co-authors on this, and I thank you for putting the kids in the state of Minnesota first yesterday.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And members, I want to thank you again for two great years, Representative Greiling, especially to you and your wisdom. Please express my appreciation to Representative Mariani, who's not here today, to Carmen and to Shannon, to Melissa and to Kate, to Lisa Larson, who, as you could see just moments ago, was still helping us, to Andrew R. Page, to the department, and to all the lobbyists. Thank you very much, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since Representative Mariani isn't here, I'll take it upon myself to thank you and also all the staff. This has been a pleasurable committee, run, I think, very fairly, and I think you've done a wonderful job of laying things over and bringing things up and making sure, as to the best of your ability, that things are aired and ironed out before they rush on, which is always the temptation here. So
thank you, Representative Greiling. And members, you know, I look forward to robust discussions on the House floor as these bills move forward. And thank you again very much for 2 great years. So with that, members, this meeting is adjourned until the call of the chair. That could always happen. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.